Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's the Nightcap.
Can I interest you in a nightcap?
No, thank you. I don't wear them.
With Ryan Gates.
Who's this guy? Mr. Balloons. Mr. Balloon Hands. No way. No way. Get real.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
How did everyone enjoy their night one of the Stanley Cup playoffs? It's a pretty good night. Some good games. Late games. I would know. I was out late. If you listen to the station often, you've understood my problems with getting Wi-Fi back, getting Wi-Fi at my house. The cable was cut over the weekend. Wi-Fi is back, so it's a good thing for me. It's a good thing for me because last night I decided, hey, I'm doing my job. This is my job. I have to be able to watch these games. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to be a good employee. I'm going to be a good soldier here. I'm not going to be able to get the games at my house, but I am going to figure out a way to watch these games. So I go home, get to an establishment, and, sit down at the end of the bar, start hanging out, start watching some hockey. It's right about when Edmonton and who are they playing again? I already forgot.
The Sharks?
Yeah, them. See, that's what happens.
Must have been quite a night.
That's what happens when you stay out that late with a couple of overtime games. You already forget who's playing who. But it was right when they were starting their game, and I arrived at this establishment, and they were having $4. I'm a man all about value. So you can go to a bar. You can go to a bar. You can walk up to the bartender and be like, give me the cheapest beer that you got. I'm not that guy. Like, I'm all about value. So you gotta measure the percentage of alcohol that you're getting for the dollar price that you're getting. So last night, there was a kid who came up, and he went that route. He went that route. He goes, yeah, I just want the cheapest beer that you have, $3, PBR. Fine, you know, fine price, fine beer. However, he was missing out on the better deal, the better value. The value play at that time was $4 for a Southern Tier IPA, which runs at about 7.5%. So you got to... So checks and balances, you know, you gotta weigh that value, ABV over dollars. I didn't do the math. I just assumed it was right. So that's how I, so anyways, there were a few of those consumed. It was kind of a long day, but I'm here with you now. We're going to be heading into another night, three games in the NHL playoffs tonight, 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. We're going to hear a couple of different perspectives on the draft coming up. And in a few minutes, we'll hear from Jack Bechta. He is an agent. He's Micah Hyde's agent, as a matter of fact. And we're going to hear from him, his thought process heading into the draft, and just a little bit about the agent's life as well. And we're also going to hear from Greg Gabriel, NFL scout for 30 years, 9 years as the Bears scouting director, spent some time with the Bills organization. We're going to hear from him coming up in the next hour. Right now, the Maple Leafs and Capitals about to get underway, and then later on, we have Chicago and Nashville. That puck will drop in probably about an hour or so. And then the late game tonight, Anaheim and Calgary, not until 10:30. So it's a good thing. Wi-Fi is back. I can just hang out at my apartment, be a good little boy tonight, and not stay out till 1 in the morning drinking $4 Southern Tier IPAs and getting free shots. Don't need that again.
Not a good thing for local establishments around the area, though.
I'm a good tipper, too. You know, I work in the industry, so I know how to tip these people, and you're right about that. Right.
I found that as well. Once you work in the industry, then your tipping either is out of hand or you've got to, like, focus on dialing it back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's typically – I'm pretty heavy-handed with it at this point because working in that industry, you learn quick that – It kind of sucks. I'm not complaining because it's part of the job you take. You know what you're getting yourself into. You know the tips. You know you're going to be relying on them. But I have certain friends out there who are very tight-fisted when it comes to tipping, and they're like, hey, if they really wanted that money, they should just include it in the price. And I said, that's not how it works. It's just not – that's a great thought you have, but that's just not how it works. So you have to do this. It's being a decent human being. And I love this kid. He's one of my best friends. Great all-around human. This is probably the worst quality about him. All right, we're gonna get into some NFL draft talk here. We got Jack Bechta coming up. He was on the John Murphy show earlier today. John Murphy, Donald Jones, here with Jack Bechta.
2 weeks away from round one of the NFL draft. It is a process, and 2 weeks left in the process, a process for the players, process for the scouts and coaches, process for the agents as well. And joining us right now on the Subway French Take Hotline, a guy who's been doing this for 25 years or more. He's an NFL agent, runs JB Sports out west. Happy to have Jack Bechta on the show with us. Jack, thanks for joining us. John Murphy and Donald Jones, we appreciate you coming on. And things change. The draft is a fluid process right up till the first names start coming off the board, isn't it, Jack?
Yes, it is fluid. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. What I find interesting now, the media is kind of the tail's wagging the dog because they have so much exposure to their audiences through, you know, social media, 24-hour, NFL Network, et cetera. But the reality is not too many people really get to see the boards, right? John could probably attest to this. A lot of NFL teams don't even let their regional scouts see their boards, right?
Yeah.
Those boards are under lock and key. So there's a lot of misinformation out right now. I call it negative season, where, you're hearing more negative things about guys because they already went through the positives in November, December, January. Now everybody's picking everything apart. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of smoke screening going on. Us as agents are, number one, trying to set the expectations for the client and the family realistically. And how do we do that? We go out and get, I call them whispers from NFL executives who do see the board. Where do you see this guy going? Give me a high-low. I don't need to know where he's at on your board. Just help me set expectations for my clients. And then, we are talking to the media. As agents, we want the positive stuff out there. If there's anything negative floating around about our clients, we try to crush it and put it to bed. To alleviate stress and make the draft process a positive experience for our clients.
So, Jack, just to be clear, what role does the media play here? It sounds like you're saying the media in this draft run-up process can have an influence on it. Do you see it mostly as a negative influence or positive, or is it mostly, as we've been saying, BS, baloney season? What do you think?
Well, that's a great question. What impact does the media have on the draft? Well, a lot of times the owners' wives, the owners' sons, read and listen to the media. They have ideas. They want input. They want to put their 2 cents in, right? That's where they're probably getting the majority of their information. For those ownership groups that aren't, shoulder to shoulder with the decision makers on a daily basis, right? And there are, can we take this guy? Will the owner sign off on him? He had, he may have got popped for a failed drug test, and it got a lot of immediate attention. It was bad timing. But the kid made one mistake. He's a really good kid. How is the media going to handle us taking this particular player? Anybody with a domestic violence issue is probably way down or even off the board today because of, the media will jump on teams, executives. And as you guys probably know, the Philly media, the New York media, they're just sitting there with their baseball bats ready to pound somebody's head in for a bad pick or somebody they could, abuse, if you will, right? So, and then I think, a lot of GMs just don't want the headaches of having to manage the media on a particular draft pick that has brought some baggage. So they'll just avoid it overall. And I think you have draft experts like Daniel Jeremiah, who actually worked in the league. So he's pretty well respected by NFL people because he's actually got his hands dirty, scouting, being on the road, scouting for two different teams, working under some good people. And, you know, Mike Mayock goes shoulder to shoulder with a lot of the scouts. He goes and have a beer with them. He's got a little bit of pedigree by playing in the NFL, or at least kind of gone through the process, and he talks to people and he listens. So you have more guys like this who are influencing, I wouldn't say the teams per se, but now the media, when you draft a player, what comes along? What media package does this player bring?
Jack, sorry about that. Was it still going?
No, he's good. Go.
Okay. Sorry about that, Jack. So for our listeners who don't really know the process, you as an agent during the college football season, obviously you go out and you start to recruit certain players. And people don't really know that, you know, different agents recruit different types of players, different guys going in the first round. Some agents only stick to that, first rounders. Some agents might stick to maybe later round guys. What's your preference in when you're recruiting the guys that you're looking for?
Yeah, you know, I'm a small to mid-size agency. I've consistently represented between probably 15 and 25 players for the last 25 years, right? Mm-hmm. So not in a given year. So each year I go out and I try to sign three or four new players every year. Sometimes it's two, sometimes it's four. I try to sign draft picks. I try to sign players who are going to All-Star games and are going to be drafted. And on top of that, I know sometimes I can't compete with the, you know, the five major firms that have 100 or more clients and, you know, pay their clients $3,000-$4,000 a month stipends or $2,000 a week or quick to loan them money. I don't want to have to buy my clients. So I have to go look, get a little bit under the radar and talk to NFL scouts and really start the process early. Being a smaller agent or mid-sized agency, I got to be one of the first ones knocking on the door. So my recruiting process will start about a year ahead of time, before the draft, maybe even 2 years sometime. A lot of schools now have programs where the agent gets certified, sets up meetings, you know, through the schools. I like to go in the front door while everybody else is kind of going in the back door. You know, schools like Iowa, North Carolina, Notre Dame, Texas, they all have these front door programs that you try to be a part of. And that's what I do. So I've been representing clients from Iowa for 17, 18 years now, from Damian Robinson, Tim DeWhite, Matt Bowen, et cetera. And so every year I represent somebody from University of Iowa. This year it's tight end George Kittle, whose stock has been slowly rising. I think that, you know, it's easier when I go back to Iowa the next year, somebody can ask George or Donnell or Micah Hyde or somebody like that. You know, as a reference, C.J. Fedorowicz, you know, all these Iowa guys I get. So I want to stay at that school, and I want to talk to the coaches there, and I want to talk to the people there. What kind of individual is he? Is he blue-collar, hardworking, low-maintenance, non-diva, non-prima donna type? Mm-hmm. That's who I want to represent, because if I represent that kid, I don't have to coddle him. You know, Micah Hyde, who the Bills just picked up, is a great example. He told me that when he was getting recruited by agents, he got in a car with an agent in Minnesota and said, "Hey, I got a new iPhone for you." And Mike said, "I got it. My phone's good." Right. And he couldn't wait to get out of there and called me up. He goes, "You know, you didn't try to buy me, you tried to earn my business." And these are the types of people that I have to look for. And sometimes they're a first rounder, but not usually, but they're usually second, third, fourth, fifth round guys that end up, you know, like a Micah Hyde, getting to a second contract and doing very well for themselves.
You said you represent George Kittle. You know, what does he bring to the game in a deep, deep tight end class?
Well, this is a deep tight end class, but if you really peel the onion on it, there's not a lot of traditional Ys, and that's the letter Y. And that's an inline tight end who's an every-down tight end who can block on first and second down, get deep on third down, go short on second down. So he's an every-down tight end. He's 247, 250 pounds. He holds three Iowa weight room records, missed a hang clean by 2 pounds. And that's an 18-year class of great tight ends going back to Dallas Clark and Tony Muiaki, et cetera. A lot of good tight ends coming out of there. and he's up on top of the board in the weight room. Secondly, you know, he's fast. He ran a 4.53 at the combine. He's got good hands. He played a little beat up this year, played on one foot basically for about six or seven games. He didn't get to show his athleticism, which you usually don't get to do in the Iowa, you know, vanilla offense. But, you know, he gives you an every down tight end. Don't be surprised if he's the fourth, fifth, sixth tight end off the board in this class.
We're on the line with Jack Bechta, NFL agent for the last 25 years with JB Sports. Hey, Jack, as you mentioned, you did have Micah Hyde. You, you know, helped bring him here to the Buffalo Bills. Did that surprise you that the Bills were so aggressive financially and even, you know, quick out of the gate to get Micah Hyde? And how difficult was it for him to move from a very successful program at Green Bay?
Well, Green Bay is special. Let's admit it. It's a special place. It's a special team. It's a special story. So Micah was kind of blessed by going from a school like Iowa to Green Bay, staying in the Midwest, playing with A-Rod, playing with, you know, Ha-Ha Dix, playing with some, you know, Clay Matthews, or, you know, just playing with some great players, mm-hmm. right? So he, and then got to play every position, got to make an impact every year he was there. I think he led the league in punt returns, per average in 14, you know, I think he returned 10 punts in college, right? So making the transition, we kind of sensed that they were kind of in a pickle in that, you know, they had Ha-Ha Dix coming up next year. They're paying Morgan Burnett, their other safety, $6.5 million. They have to go out and get some true corners. They've lacked that since, you know, True Font, Al Harris, and Rod Woodson used to be there. I used to represent Al Harris as well, so I know that secondary pretty good. Anyway, we kind of saw the writing on the wall that they can't pay him what he's probably worth, and Ted even told me that, but they would like him back if, you know, probably at a discount, in which, you know, I don't discount my players. My job is to get them the maximum value that they have. So when I did meet with the Bills, I said, look, this is probably what it's going to take. Design the deal like this. No nonsense, you know, here it is. I won't play games with you. You got to ring the bell at these numbers. The contract structure should be like this. Whatever team Micah plays for, he doesn't want to do a 1-2-3-year deal. He wants to do a long-term deal, make an impact, and be the last team he plays for. That's the kind of guy he is. So they came back as soon as the door was open for free agency to send me an offer that was, like, I wrote it up myself. And as long as I've ever been in business, I only got to do that one or two other times, and that was for some really premium free agents. So right away I called Mike and told him, hey, these guys are really serious. You are obviously a top priority. This doesn't happen very often in this business. And so, you know, I think the attraction for Micah is Sean McDermott, the head coach, who is a lighthouse for football people. He's a lighthouse for good coaches. You know, Juan Castillo left John Harbaugh and the Ravens to go coach for this guy. There's a pedigree of a really good Andy Reid Eagle staff that kind of, you know, bringing the band back together, you know, Andy Reid part two up there in Buffalo under Sean McDermott. I think he's bringing Micah in to be his Brian Dawkins. And I knew that secondary pretty well. I had some players in there when he was back in Philadelphia and some other places. So Sean is a hell of a coach. The ownership did really well by bringing him in. And that was our attraction, that we think there's going to be some stability there in Buffalo because of that. And then Micah becomes a quarterback of the defense. And what's ironic is, you know, it's an agent's job to play the what-if game with players. Okay, what if the Packers offer you $5 million and the Buffalo Bills offer you $6.5 million? What if the Jacksonville Jaguars offer you $6 million and Packers offer you this? Like, what if, what if? So I played that game for about 2 months with Micah going into free agency. And ironically, we used the Bills a lot, right, because I knew there'd be a new coach. And, you know, it's not always the, you know, tops of the list for free agents to head to. But so you use, you know, teams like that are going through transition. And he was great. He was just like, well, I have no problem going to Buffalo. You know, I want to play football. I want to make an impact. I want to be a part of a new history. You know, I don't want to live in somebody else's history. Hmm. And that was his attitude through the whole thing. And he didn't even blink when I said, hey, I think things are shaping up for you in Buffalo where you can be that, you can go there and kind of be his Brian Dawkins. You can be the quarterback of the defense. You can play a lot. You can make an impact. They're showing they want you. And we've had some other suitors, but, you know, Buffalo came with the full package, and we didn't waste a whole lot of time in signing that deal.
Hey, Jack, last thing, I want to circle back to something you said earlier. It sounds like you were managing expectations to a certain extent with Micah Hyde, but you mentioned how important that is for your clients going into the draft to manage their expectations, their family's expectations. How do you do that, and especially as the hype ramps up, you know, just 2 weeks away from the draft now?
Well, that's a great question because your parents, girlfriends, fiancés, dads, brothers, sisters, best friends are going to be on the Internet every single day, okay, every day. And that's where they're getting their information from. I tell my guys, I'll set a really wide net early on. And I'll start bringing it down about a week before the draft when I get, you know, my input. I'll call 7-8 teams, get a sampling of where they think you'll go on the board, on their boards, and where you'll go in the draft. So, but I'll always prepare them for not being drafted. I remember I had a linebacker out of Iowa, Pat Anger. I called the Bears up and I said, hey, what do you think about Pat? He's a 6-foot, 233-pound middle linebacker. And they go, well, we'll take him as an undrafted free agent. We think you'd be a good special teams player. I go, oh, shit. Sorry for the S word there. I call another team. They kind of say the same thing. I go, God, I thought this guy went to the Senior Bowl. He led the Big Ten in tackle. He's all Big Ten. He played for 4 years, checked every single box, ran 4 or 5s at the combine. I guess he is kind of smaller. So I'm panicked, and I fly up there and give him, a two-hour rundown. This is what we're going to do if you're an undrafted free agent, right? Because these are people in the business that I spoke to that didn't think he'd get drafted. Draft day comes, he's a second-round pick to the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
You know? So, you get these kind of it's our job to prepare for the worst, because the worst thing that happens when these players have these parties and the neighbors start coming over and the friends start coming over and the coaches start coming over and the third round goes by, then the fourth round, then the fifth round, then the sixth round, players start going, teammates start going, guys you know you're better than start going. You don't go, right? And everybody's looking at you like there's something wrong. So it's my job. I don't want to be in that house. Trust me, I've been in that house before. I'll never do it again. So it's my job to manage the environment, manage the expectations. I try to encourage my clients to have a plan. You know, you'll be with the team come Saturday night, plan to have a celebration Saturday night. But I'll sit down, here's the best-case scenario, here's the worst-case scenario. Here's the team needs, and don't be surprised if this team drafts you or that team, even though you never heard from them. So these are the types of things that I try to do going into the draft, and it's really tough. I had a father email me something the other day, like, look at this negative article on my kid. So what I do, I go to the Internet for, like, 10 seconds, find 3 positive articles that you didn't see these, right? So whatever you want to find out there, you can find it. Like, I've seen everybody down on, a lot of their people are down on Myles Garrett now, right, trying to throw him under the bus or trying to pick holes in his game right now, Mitch Trubisky, et cetera. So, I just try to keep the rudder and the compass pointing in one direction and kind of keep everybody calm. There's a counseling component to this business.
All right, that's Jack Bechta, a sports agent. He represents Micah Hyde, among others, and he's talking a little bit about the draft there, a little bit about how Micah Hyde decided to come here. So that was, I found that a really good interview, and I didn't even realize something was said on it. But I digress. I digress. All right, coming back here, Sal Capaccio reporting earlier some news about the Bills and Sammy Watkins, and it looked like Toronto was about to score another goal. They are up 1-0. Mitch Marner with his first career playoff goal about 90 seconds into this game against the Capitals, but they just had one waved off. It looks like it's going to be a kicking motion if I had to hazard a guess. No goal. I'm sure this will be reviewed, and maybe by the time we get back here, I'll have a definitive answer for you, or maybe they'll still be reviewing it. Let's find out together. It's the Nightcap on WGR.
Yeah, Sammy looks good. He's right on schedule. There's been no setbacks. I know he's chomping at the bit to get back on the field, and we're anxious to have him back on the field, in all honesty. We just expect him right now to keep attacking that rehab process for us like he's been to this point.
There is Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott on Sammy Watkins. Before we dive into him and the report that Sal Capaccio put out there a few hours ago, that review in the Maple Leafs game took a lot less time than I thought it would. It was for goaltender interference, and it was clearly not goaltender interference. This was the first time I've watched an NHL review where they actually did it in a timely fashion and didn't even, with an obvious call, take far too long on it. Took about a minute. They realized that it wasn't goaltender interference, so now it's 2-0 Toronto over Washington, but Washington is about to go on a 5-on-3 power play. So maybe that will change quickly. I'll keep you posted what's going on in that game. Sammy Watkins, our Sal Capaccio, earlier today reporting that the Bills not quite sure what they want to do with Sammy Watkins, whether or not they're going to exercise the fifth-year option on Sammy Watkins. And you can go to WGR550.com. Sal's got an article up there for you to check out. They don't have to make the final decision about picking up the option until May 2nd. So they definitely have a lot of time. The draft is going to go down before then. So I'm wondering if maybe what happens in the draft will affect that decision. But the reason Sal is citing in this report is that next year, the option would be worth $13 million against the cap. And that $13 million, you could negotiate a longer term contract if you wanted to make that a less of a cap hit, but it's guaranteed against injury. And we all know the injury history with Sammy Watkins. He already had another foot surgery almost now, what is it, 3 months ago? 3 months ago now he had a foot surgery, and he's still rehabbing that. And we'll see what the future holds for Sammy Watkins and how that continues to go. So I expect that they're going to probably take their time with this decision and wait up until the end just to be able to see how he is responding, like how he is doing in rehab, all of that. And maybe they decide that it's not worth the risk. And I think the draft is definitely a factor in what they can do with him. Because if they are sitting there at 10, and we've been hearing today, we heard from Greg Gabriel, who you'll hear in about a half hour or so, Greg Gabriel saying that in his mock draft, from what he's hearing, and he's got 30 years scouting in the NFL, so I'm gonna take him and at his word that he's probably got some pretty good insight talking with people within the league. He's got the three quarterbacks going in the top 10, the Bills taking the last of the quarterbacks. But if these quarterbacks are being drafted higher, someone else had a mock draft out that had four quarterbacks going in the top 10. So if these quarterbacks are being pushed at the top of the draft board, like, talent's going to be falling down, and maybe the Bills can get their shot at, I mean, ideally it would be like a Malik Hooker or Marshawn Lattimore, but they could maybe get their shot at trading down and grabbing one of these receivers, Mike Williams or Corey Davis. Like, I think the draft will have a definite impact on the decision on Sammy Watkins, because behind Sammy Watkins on this roster, there is no great receiving talent. There's just no great receiving talent. So if they can find a good receiver, one that they think could be more of a franchise guy, maybe could be a little more durable than Sammy Watkins, like, maybe that changes the decision and you could feel better about moving on from Sammy Watkins. But to not even, to be on the fence, and I know it's not a new regime when it comes to Doug Whaley being the general manager, but with just Sean McDermott being coach, like, you, as Doug Whaley, traded up for this guy. You traded up, you gave up another first-round pick, and to even be on the fence about exercising that fifth-year option is completely absurd to me. Like, you don't have great receiving talent. It's not like you have young receivers in the system that you have a ton of faith in. Like, Desmond Lewis, is that a Colby Listenby who's never practiced in the NFL? Like, you need to have Sammy Watkins, even if you do draft another guy. Like, you should still be bringing Sammy Watkins back next year, and I understand the injuries that he's had, but you spent a huge amount of draft currency to bring this guy in, and you need to see him for the full 5 years. You can't just let him walk after 4 years because you're like, oh, well, we're afraid he's going to get injured again. Like, that's not a good look. It's not a good look if you're going to move up in the draft, a draft that was absolutely loaded with wide receivers. You could have just stood pat and maybe gotten Odell Beckham Jr., maybe gotten Kelvin Benjamin if you want him. He's not my favorite receiver or anything, but he was on that draft. Brandon Cooks was in that draft. Like, you had this, Jarvis Landry was in that draft. Like, that draft was just loaded with wide receiver talent, and then you made the move to go up and get Sammy Watkins into even really beyond the fence about that decision. I know the injury history. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, they can decide that they don't want to go forward with the option and still negotiate a contract with him or put the franchise tag on him. And Sal, in his article, he puts, this year the franchise tag for wide receivers was about $15.6 million. So he's predicting next year would be around $16.5 million. And of course, once you put the franchise tag on him, much like last year with Cordy Glenn with the Buffalo Bills, you can negotiate a longer-term deal, which would make it so that it's not necessarily that $16.5 million. But I don't know. I think you just have to be able to commit to Sammy Watkins after you spent all that draft currency on him to not even bring him in here for the fifth year. It's kind of crazy, especially when you are Doug Whaley. Like, what are you looking at receiver? You look at the roster they have now, and I think a lot of fans, they heard Sean McDermott say the number two receiver is on this roster, and a lot of fans were like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Like, that can't be true. That can't be true. Like, you look at the wide receiver. Andre Holmes is going to step up as a number two wide receiver here. So maybe something happens in the draft. Maybe they draft three wide receivers that they have a lot of, that they think will be great, and they make that decision closer to May 2nd after the draft has already gone through. But for an organization and for Doug Whaley, the GM, who gave up a first round pick, a fourth round pick, to get Sammy Watkins, essentially, you would think that you would want that guy here. You would want to see that guy for the full 5 years and not cut any of that short. And Sal does say in his article that he strongly believes that the Bills will pick up the option. And I think that's probably what it comes down to in the end, that reasoning, where if you're thinking about it, you're like, oh man, like, we spent that draft currency on him. We have to be able to retain him and keep him for that full 5 years. Otherwise, what was the point? Like, EJ Manuel. You spent a first-round pick on EJ Manuel. You didn't pick the fifth-year option up on him. But that's not because of his injury history. It was his on-the-field performance. You judged EJ Manuel on his on-the-field performance, and that's why you decided not to pick the fifth-year option on him. And you traded down for EJ Manuel, which is another thing. So you didn't necessarily have to think too much about it. Like, oh, we got extra picks for EJ Manuel, but when he gave those picks up, you could have had another player that you could have been looking at for 5 years. But instead, you gave a pick up for Sammy Watkins. You're going to want to see him for the full 5 years. And you're going to want to see what he can do on the field. The injury history is certainly there. But you're going to want to see him, hopefully, healthy this entire season and see what he can give you as a healthy Sammy Watkins. And for the most part, a healthy Sammy Watkins is a super effective football player, a super effective wide receiver, and he's been pretty good. So if they're just still thinking about it, that's fine. Like, this is a staff with Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott, you'll hear him say it, as long as he's coach here, I'm methodical. I take my time with the decisions, and I expect him to take their time with this decision. They took their time with the Tyrod Taylor decision, and I'm sure they'll take their time with this Sammy Watkins decision as well. If you want to read more about it, head to WGR550.com. Sal's got an article up about it there. All right, 2-1 now. Joe, what happened? I wasn't paying attention.
Washington had the 5-on-3 when they came back from commercial break on the television, and then the Leafs killed off the first part of it, and then the second part, T.J. Oshie set up Justin Williams in the slot to go down 2-1.
T.J. Oshie and Justin Williams, yes. Two potential unrestricted free agents.
Correct.
TJ Oshie doesn't really do much for me because he's going to get a huge deal, especially after scoring 33 goals this year.
And he's going to regress a lot. He scored 33 goals, and he finished with a 25% shot percentage.
Oh, which wow,
people talk about Evander Kane regressing. Evander Kane, if I remember correctly, was about 16.
Like, yeah, I was going to say it was like 15, 16.
TJ Oshie's at 25.
Wow, that is like...
He's coming way down.
Yeah, that's he's definitely going to come down. But, I mean, Justin Williams, they talk about bringing in a proven winner for the Buffalo Sabres. Look no further than Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7, if you're looking for a player of that type. I know he's 35, but if you get him for a couple years and you need that kind of leadership, you think you need that type of player? I was taking a look at some of the unrestricted free agents coming up, and Justin Williams was one of the ones that actually like popped out at me. I'm like, that's a guy that if you want that proven winner type who's like, I'm going to tell you what ways to do things to be a winner, it's Justin Williams. He's been winning every single place he's ever gone. 803-0551, 888-552, 550 are the phone numbers here. If you want to comment on the Sammy Watkins decision that they're, you know, taking their time with, you want to comment about this game that's going on right now or unrestricted free agents coming up in the NHL, feel free. I'm here. Coming back, though, we've got the ultimate tale of fan dedication. You'll hear about that next on the Nightcap.
Battle in front of the net. Hornquist get himself back up. He got knocked down. Now Kessel on the near side. Kessel penetrates. Shoot! He scores! Phil the Thrill can fire the pill.
Who was that? Is that the Penguins announcers?
Yeah, that's the Penguins play-by-play radio man.
Their play-by-play radio guy?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a little bit better. I watched a Penguins game.
Or no, maybe TV.
If it's their TV guy.
The radio guy's I've heard before. I think he's different.
Yeah, I think I've talked about this with Brian Mazurowski, too, who is a Penguins fan. And let me tell you, their TV announcers, horrible. Absolutely horrible. Like, it was a game against the Sabres. I was watching the Penguins feed through one of my extremely legally obtained streams of NHL games. It was one of those, legally obtained streams. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm watching this game against the Penguins, and these announcers are just terrible. The amount... I could have done a drinking game. Anders Nielsen was starting the game. I could have done a drinking game of the amount of times that the color commentator said Anders Nielsen's height. He said it at least 10 times within the first two periods. And I was like, I think everyone gets it. Everyone gets the fact that Anders Nielsen is 6'6". We understand. You don't have to keep bringing it up every time. Oh, Anders Nielsen with that save there. Oh, he really uses that big frame there. 6'6". Every single time. We get it. We get it. He's huge. He's a tall guy. You don't got to keep telling us. Like three times is enough. One per period, maybe. Speaking of Pens fans, this Pens fan, well, those guys aren't Pens fans. I guess they technically work for the Pens or whatever TV network. But a Pens fan last night watching game one, it was, let's see, I just need to... Pittsburgh police, they responded to a call at City of Steel Auto Detail Shop. A man there, 45 years old, had been stabbed in the head with a screwdriver. Stabbed in the head with a screwdriver after being having a verbal altercation, which obviously got pretty aggressive because he was stabbed in the head with a screwdriver. The dude, though, fine. Apparently it wasn't like in his temple or anything. No brain injuries. Must have just like grazed his skull or something. I don't have any pictures of the guy. But the police come up and are like, yo, dude, you got to get to a hospital. You got to get to a hospital. Like, yeah, you were just stabbed in the head with a screwdriver. Guy's like, no, it's okay. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to hang out. I'm going to watch the Penguins play. And once the game is over, don't worry. I'll drive myself to the hospital, and I'll make it. Don't worry about me. I'm only bleeding a little bit. I've got this old garage rag that I can use to stop the bleeding for a little while. I've got this grease rag that I've been, you know, cleaning off drive shafts with. I'll just put that on my head wound for a little bit. Watch the rest of the Pens game, then head to the hospital. So this guy drives himself to the hospital after the Pens game. Just what dedication. I do have to question it, though. Like, I get it. I get it. It's the playoffs. It's the NHL playoffs. But your Pittsburgh Penguins just won the Stanley Cup last year. Just last year, they won the Stanley Cup. And it's game one of what should be a pretty decent run for the Pittsburgh Penguins. At least probably one series win. And then if they face the Capitals, that should be interesting. But, I mean, Capitals are losing right now 2-1 after one period. Like, they just won the Stanley Cup last year. You just had the ultimate thrill. I think you can take care of this head wound, this open head wound, after you've been stabbed with a screwdriver in the skull. I think you can take care of that during game one. They got TVs in the hospital. I'm sure Pittsburgh area hospitals are probably, you know, showing the Pens game. What else would be on? Some PSAs? I don't know. I haven't been to a hospital a lot to check out their TV package.
I think MASH was on the last time I was at
MASH.
I was at a hospital.
Wow, MASH. That's pretty good. But the Pens just win the cup. Dedication for sure. Dedication.
Hardcore fans, you gotta represent your team. That's why people grow their own playoff beards in the playoffs.
Yeah, we did see a guy earlier who had his face shaved clean, and normally he's got a beard. So we were questioning, like, has he got a team in the
show? He probably does.
He's got a team in the show right now. Like, what's going on there?
So if you got your players out there battling through injuries, I remember Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah, I guess,
from a couple years ago, yeah. He had a fractured foot. Like a sprained wrist, punctured lung, and he played through it all. Fans are trying to do the same.
He's just trying to match. He's just trying to match the playoff intensity. He's like, you know what? My Pens are out there battling. They're going to be battling through injury. I got to battle through this this first injury of the series. It's mine. It's my battle. I got to fight through it. We'll take one quick call here before we hit the break. Brian in Tonawanda wants to talk about Sammy Watkins. Brian, you are on the nightcap.
How's it going, guys?
What's going on?
Not too much. I did want to touch on the Sammy Watkins subject. I think that, we obviously made a mistake. And I think that if we look at the numbers in a whole versus all the receivers that were drafted in that year, you can see that he's obviously the one that's underperformed. You know, you talked about a bunch of guys just 10 minutes ago. You know, Mike Evans, you left out in that too. You know, there's a ton of guys that we could have gotten in that draft. So I feel like he's still got some worth right now. And he's injury prone. Every year he's been with us, he's been hurt. If we can get somebody to bite on him in the draft and get a valuable draft pick, this is a deep draft as well for receivers. I'd like to see us go with Corey Davis in the first round. I think he's an elite superstar, and that's what we need to do. We need to draft better, and that's all I wanted to say. And I'm sorry for ranting.
No, it's fine. That's what I'm here for. I do disagree on some points. I don't think you want to cut. Like, for me, it's just you gave up way too much for Sammy Watkins. You just simply cut the cord on him. And I don't think you're going to get a fair value return for him at the draft in order to get that. I know he's injury prone. I know he has trouble staying on the field. But I need to at least see him for this season. And I would like to see him for next season, too. Because coming out of that draft, he was the consensus number one receiver coming out of that draft. And when he's on the field, he is talented. They just haven't really had a quarterback that's been able to get him the ball effectively like some of these other guys.
I can totally agree with that. And you know what? I like Sammy a lot. I think that he really is a great talent. But I think that really we need to start drafting better. And I think that we've missed a ton in the past, like, 10, 15 years.
Oh, yeah, that's you are 100% right. I got to cut you off. Just got to head to break here. But, yeah, the draft has been pretty bad some years for the Bills. That's certainly something they need to get better at, and I think every fan feels that way. Every fan out there is like, they need to do a better job in the draft. We're going to hear from a draft guy coming up in the next segment, Greg Gabriel. He is with Pro Football Weekly. We'll hear from him. He's got some perspective on the quarterbacks coming out in this draft, so we'll get that coming up next. Game one between Chicago and Nashville should be getting underway shortly, and as we head into break here, 2-1 in the first intermission, Toronto leading Washington. This is the Nightcap. You're listening to WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.